Okay, well, if you can hear me or not, either way, take your Bible out, turn to Isaiah chapter 13, and we're going to continue there. See if I can find it here. Okay. Still not working, or it's good? All right, Isaiah chapter 13. Good to see everybody, of course. We are in this section of Isaiah that is talking about the nations around Judah and Jerusalem, okay? By the way, I do have more of those maps. Raise your hand if you did not get one of these. It has a map of the places in Isaiah. Michael, I'll volunteer you again here. Keep your hand up, and Michael will bring you a map. We have plenty of them. Some of them are kind of butchered. I kind of lost my patience with the paper cutter and just started chopping away at it. So some of them are a little messed up, but you should still be able to see on there. On one side is a map, and I have the map. I should have made it the first slide, but I didn't. On one side is the map that shows the different places that are being referenced in the book of Isaiah. Especially in this section, chapters 13 to 27. And on the other side of that same half sheet is just a breakdown of the chapters of this section and which nations are being addressed. Thanks, Michael. And referred to in those chapters. We'll do this at the end of the class. Go back through and try to remember where the different things are in the book of Isaiah, at least that we've talked about so far. And again, this is something that I would like us to make a goal for this study. We're spending 6 months in Isaiah, and so the hope is that at the end of 6 months, so we kind of work at it as we go, we'll commit these things to memory, where the different things are. That would be just, I think, a tremendous step for all of us, because I'm still not there in this class. It will help me, obviously, but it'd be a huge step. As big as important as the book of Isaiah is, it would be just huge to have a memory of, oh, I know where these things are. I can roughly tell you in each of the 66 chapters, you know, where things are, what the chapters are about. That would be a huge goal. It is a huge goal, important goal, and I think that's attainable if we commit ourselves to it. I'm making my speech early. I'm supposed to make this speech at the end of the class when we go over the highlights, but there you have your map and the kind of breakdown of this section of the book. Okay, let's do this. This kind of helps set the stage for what we're talking about here. We have Israel, the United Kingdom, and the United Kingdom divides in the days of Rehoboam and Jeroboam. And what are the two nations that come out of the one nation? Judah and Israel. Which one's which in terms of north and south? Okay, Israel in the north, Judah in the south, okay? And as you see here, Israel doesn't last quite as long, and they are overtaken or overrun, taken captive by which nation? Assyria, okay? We've been talking some about that in this class. Judah lasts a little bit longer, and who takes them?
Babylon.
And that's actually what we're going to be talking about today, or at least we're going to talk about the Babylonians, or at least God's message to them. And then there will be a return later on. And where in the midst of all this is Isaiah prophesying? At the end of Israel, in Judah. All right? So he's addressing Judah and Jerusalem, the southern kingdom, but it's at the time where Israel is being taken captive by Assyria, and Judah is going to survive that threat and then last a little bit longer. Okay, this is important, especially for today's class. We're talking about God's message about Babylon, okay? Now, think about Isaiah's time, where he is, and what would be going on here, okay? If Isaiah is prophesying in the time that Assyria is taking Israel captive, and as we saw, Israel's not the only nation that Assyria is conquering. We also saw that Assyria would conquer Syria, among other peoples, okay? So think about it. At this time of Isaiah, Assyria is the main superpower, is the main world power right now. That's why they're going around and eating everybody's lunch, right? So Babylon is not yet the superpower. That's still a few years off. So keep that in mind as Isaiah talks about Babylon, or God talks about Babylon in Isaiah. It's not quite yet Babylon's time. But this shows us a couple things. One, at least the wisdom of God, the foreknowledge of God. Even when Babylon's an emerging nation and not quite powerful yet enough to do any harm to anybody, God is still looking ahead and saying, well, this is the way things are going to go down the road. And again, as we've talked about, as we'll continue to talk about today, God's in control of all these things, so he knows what's going to happen. Remember where the time and place of Isaiah thinking about Babylon. Okay, we're in this section here. I hope, again, if you also need one of these, I have them, ask them from me after class, a schedule. Be reading, please, in the book of Isaiah, especially in this section as we go along, so you're familiar with the text as we're talking about it in class. There's the map that I just gave you, and let's continue on here. All right, these are the different nations that will be addressed in the section we're going to be talking about Babylon today, which is found in chapters 13 and 14, and then also in chapter 21, it comes back and addresses Babylon there as well. So those are the chapters that we will be looking at. All right, let's step back a little bit and talk about Babylon in the larger scope of the Bible, because I think this will be important and is important for understanding everything that's going on here. Okay, trivia question. Where's the first place in the Bible that Babylon is mentioned, or that Babylon comes up? First place we see Babylon in Scripture. Okay, Brian says the book of Daniel. Remember Babylon, a big deal there in the book of Daniel? Other guesses or answer here? It is in Genesis, but it's a little bit tricky. Because, for some strange reason, the people that have translated our English Bibles have not rendered it Babylon, but they have rendered it Babel, okay? If you remember, in the book of Genesis, there's this guy, you probably won't remember this, I always forget this as well. In chapter 10, it tells us that there's a guy named Nimrod. He's a mighty hunter before the Lord. Thus it is said, like Nimrod, a mighty hunter before the Lord. It's kind of a weird thing, but it tells us that Nimrod establishes this city called Babel. It's the same word as Babylon. I don't know why the translators have made it Babel in Genesis and Babylon everywhere else in the Old Testament, but it's the same word, same place, same thing being talked about. So then in chapter 11, people in Babel and Babylon get together, and what do they decide to do? Now, what's the point of this tower that the people in Babylon want to build? They're going to build it up to heaven, up to God. They say, we're going to make a great name for ourselves by accomplishing this great thing. What does God think of this project? Too powerful, too prideful, right? And so what does he do? Confuses their languages so they can't communicate with each other. And what happens then to all the peoples? They disperse, they scatter, they start, you know, kind of collecting in different places based on the language they speak, which would be natural, and that's kind of how we become these nations that go out all over the earth. Okay, what's the picture of the Tower of Babel? It's human pride, it's human arrogance. Look who we are, look what we can accomplish, look at the great things we are going to do, and God's response to that is, no, you're not. And so that's the picture of Babylon from the very beginning of the Bible. Okay, so then we go through the historical books, as we talked about, and Babylon becomes the one that conquers Judah. That's a pretty big deal. This is God's people, God's kings from the line of David, and it's Babylon that is the one to destroy them and to take them away into captivity. The prophets, almost every prophet will address Babylon and their arrogance, as we'll see today, and rebuke them for that, how God will humble their arrogance. As Brian mentioned, Daniel is a huge book in thinking about the idea of Babylon, what Babylon represents, what it stands for. I put him up here. Remember some of the images in the book of Daniel that describe Nebuchadnezzar and Babylon. Remember that Nebuchadnezzar had a dream of a great statue, and that statue represented the great kingdoms of man. And the head of the statue, made of gold, which is the best of all the materials in the statue, the head of that statue is Babylon, okay? And that statue is then crushed by that stone that represents God's kingdom. Remember that Nebuchadnezzar also has a dream that he is, and Babylon is this great tree that provides for all the nations. It's wonderful, it's majestic, it's great, but then in that same dream, it's chopped down, okay? And then what happens next is Nebuchadnezzar goes up on his rooftop. I'm assuming not the next day, because he had some time to forget the dream. Nebuchadnezzar goes up on his rooftop and looks out at Babylon and says, look at this great city that I have built, this great things that I have accomplished. And so what does God do to Nebuchadnezzar? Takes away his kingdom and turns him into an animal. So he's crawling on all fours, and he's got fingernails like bird's claws. He's eating grass. Okay, it's the same picture, kind of over and over again with this Babylon thing. It's pride, human pride, and accomplishment. Look at who we are. Look at what we've done. And God humbles them. And then you get the New Testament. It's interesting. There's this interesting note in 1 Peter 5 as Peter is like signing off in his letter. He says, those who are in Babylon, or she who is in Babylon, greet you, right? And most people think that Peter is not in actual Babylon, but Peter is writing from Rome, okay? And he has used Babylon now as a kind of nickname for Rome, because what has Rome become but this great world empire that's built on its own accomplishments and pride and arrogance, okay? And then it wouldn't then surprise us that in the book of Revelation, the great city that is being addressed, and depending on your interpretation of Revelation, it's most likely that is, again, Rome being referred to. But it's the great harlot. It's the great prostitute, the great city that is utterly opposed to the city of God in Jerusalem. And these two cities are waging war against each other, one representing, you know, again, human pride, representing sin, wickedness, and the other representing everything that belongs to God. And that nation in Revelation is referred to as Babylon. Okay, so when we talk about Babylon in the Bible, there's more going on than just, well, Babylon was another one of the nations. Okay, Babylon seems to represent more than that. It seems throughout from the first book to the last book, Babylon seems to represent the epitome of human pride, of human arrogance that God cannot tolerate, and that God will and has all through the years humbled and brought low, okay? All right, let's get into our actual text here and read some of this. As we read, what we'll do is we'll read chapters 13 and 14. We'll just read that all together. It'll be a little bit, but I think it'd be good to just read chapters 13 and 14. And then we'll come back later to chapter 21 later on in the class. But as we read, ask yourself these questions. How is Babylon described? How is this text describing Babylon? And we mentioned this on Wednesday, but think about it from two perspectives, two camera angles here. How is Babylon described from the perspective of man, from the world? How does the world see Babylon, or how does Babylon see itself? Okay, what's the human viewpoint of Babylon? But then how does God see Babylon? How is Babylon described from God's point of view? Then ask yourself as we read, what is God's plan for Babylon? What is he going to do with them? And then ask yourself, is there a path for Babylon's redemption? We mentioned that it's not uncommon in this section of the nations that as God rebukes and condemns the nations, he opens up a pathway for them to be redeemed. And so as we read about Babylon, ask yourself, does that exist here? Do we see that option or that pathway created here for Babylon? All right, look at this text with me. Ask yourself these questions, and we'll discuss them once we read all of chapter 13 and 14 of Isaiah. The message, the oracle concerning Babylon, chapter 13, verse 1, which Isaiah the son of Amoz saw. Lift up a standard on a bare hill. Raise your voice to them. Wave the hand that they may enter the doors of the nobles. I have commanded my consecrated ones. I have even called my mighty warriors, my proudly exulting ones, to execute my anger. Tis a sound of tumult on the mountains, like that of many people, a sound of the uproar of kingdoms, of nations gathered together. The Lord of hosts is mustering the army for battle. They are coming from a far country, from the farthest horizons. the Lord and his instruments of indignation to destroy the whole land. Wail, for the day of the Lord is near. It will come as destruction from the Almighty. Therefore all hands will fall limp. Every man's heart will melt. They will be terrified. Pains and anguish will take hold of them. They will writhe like a woman in labor. They will look at one another in astonishment, their faces aflame. Behold, the day of the Lord is coming, cruel with fury and burning anger, to make the land a desolation, and he will exterminate its sinners from it. For the stars of heaven and their constellations will not flash forth their light. The sun will be dark when it rises, and the moon will not shed its light. Thus I will punish the world for its evil and the wicked for their iniquity. I will also put an end to the arrogance of the proud and abase the haughtiness of the ruthless. I will make mortal man scarcer than pure gold, and mankind than the gold of Ophir. Therefore I will make the heavens tremble, and the earth will be shaken from its place at the fury of the Lord of hosts in the day of his burning anger. And it will be that like a hunted gazelle, or like sheep with none to gather them, they will each turn to his own people, and each one flee to his own land. Anyone who is found will be thrust through, and anyone who is captured will fall by the sword. Their little ones also will be dashed to pieces before their eyes. Their houses will be plundered, and their wives ravished. Behold, I am going to stir up the Medes against them, who will not value silver or take pleasure in gold. And their bows will mow down the young men. They will not even have compassion on the fruit of the womb, nor will their eye pity children. And Babylon, the beauty of kingdoms, the glory of the Chaldeans' pride, will be as when God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah. It will never be inhabited or lived in from generation to generation, nor will the Arab pitch his tent there, nor will shepherds make their flocks lie down there. But desert creatures will lie down there, and their houses will be full of owls. Ostriches also will live there, and shaggy goats will frolic there. Hyenas will howl in their fortified towers, and jackals in their luxurious palaces. Her fateful time also will soon come, and her days will not be prolonged. Chapter 14. When the Lord will have compassion on Jacob, and again choose Israel, and settle them in their own land, then strangers will join them and attach themselves to the house of Jacob. The peoples will take them along and bring them to their own place, and the house of Israel will possess them as an inheritance in the land of the Lord, as male servants and female servants, and they will take their captors captive, and will rule over their oppressors. And it will be in the day when the Lord gives you rest from your pain and turmoil, and harsh service in which you have been enslaved, that you will take up this taunt against the king of Babylon and say, "How the oppressor has ceased, and how fury has ceased. The Lord has broken the staff of the wicked, the scepter of rulers, which used to strike the peoples in fury with unceasing strokes, which subdued the nations in anger with unrestrained persecution. The whole earth is at rest and is quiet. They break forth into shouts of joy. Even the cypress trees rejoice over you, and the cedars of Lebanon, saying, 'Since you were laid low, no tree cutter comes up against us.' Sheol from beneath is excited over you to meet you when you come. It arouses you for you, the spirits of the dead, all the leaders of the earth. It raises all the kings of the nations from their thrones. They will respond and say to you, 'Even you have been made weak as we are. You have become like us. Your pomp and the music of your harps have been brought down to Sheol. Maggots are spread out as your bed beneath you, and worms are your covering. How you have fallen from heaven, O star of the morning, son of the dawn. You have been cut down to the earth, you who have weakened the nations. But you said in your heart, 'I will ascend to heaven. I will raise my throne above the stars of God, and I will sit on the mounts of the assembly in the recesses of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will make myself like the Most High.' Nevertheless, you will be thrust down to Sheol, to the recesses of the pit. Those who see you will gaze at you. They will ponder over you, saying, 'Is this the man who made the earth tremble, who shook kingdoms, who made the world like a wilderness and overthrew its cities, who did not allow his prisoners to go home? All the kings of the nations lie in glory, each in his own tomb. But you have been cast out of your tomb like a rejected branch, clothed with the slain who are pierced with a sword, who go down to the stones of the pit like a trampled corpse. You will not be united with them in burial, because you have ruined your country. You have slain your people. May the offspring of evildoers not be mentioned forever. Prepare for his sons a place of slaughter because of the iniquity of their fathers. They must not arise and take possession of the earth and fill the face of the world with cities. I will rise up against them, declares the Lord of hosts, and will cut off from Babylon name and survivors, offspring and posterity, declares the Lord. I will also make it a possession for the hedgehog and swamps of water, and I will sweep it with the broom of destruction, declares the Lord of hosts. Okay, we'll stop there. The rest of this chapter is about some other nations, and so we will end there, and I'll send it to you now. Use these questions kind of as a guide for the discussion, but how is Babylon described in this section? And again, is there a difference between the way it's described from man's perspective and from God's perspective? What's the description of Babylon like? Okay, Michael says it's mighty. Where do we see that? What are some different descriptions of the mightiness of Babylon in chapter? Of which chapter here? 13, verse 3. My consecrated ones, my mighty warriors, my proudly exulting ones. Where else do we see evidence of their might in these two chapters here? 13:19, Babylon, the beauty of kingdoms, the glory of the Chaldeans' pride. Okay? What else do we see in terms of description of Babylon in these two verses? Did you catch what happened here? Basically, chapter 13 is God's message for Babylon. And then chapter 14 is kind of similar but different. And it's expressed as the song or the taunt that the people will sing to the king of Babylon once all this is over here. So they're both messages, obviously, for Babylon, but come in a little bit different format. But what else do you see here in terms of how Babylon is described in these two chapters? They're a weapon. Where do you see that? Chapter 13? Yep. The Lord and his instruments of indignation. Okay. What else are we seeing? Laura? Okay. Where do you see that? Okay, so we see, especially, again, these two perspectives, as we've seen before, giving us contrasting pictures, right? We have Babylon, the great and mighty, okay? And we didn't look at some of these verses here later on in chapter 14, like in verse 16, for instance, okay? They look at the king of Babylon and they say, is this the man who made the earth tremble, who shook kingdoms and made the world like a wilderness? This from man's perspective, this is Babylon. They rule the world. They make the whole earth tremble. Everyone's terrified of them. But yet, when the Lord shows up, as Laura pointed out in chapter 13, verse 6 and following, when the day of the Lord comes, this mighty nation that used to terrify other people, their whole body falls limp, right? And they have no strength or courage on the day of the Lord, okay? What else do you see in terms of how Babylon is described, either from man's perspective or from God's perspective? Robert?
In 13:17, you see the future picture of what's going to happen and the reaction from what the means are going to do.
Okay, so this moves us now into the second question here. Okay, God has a plan for this. So the day of the Lord is described in verse 13, or chapter 13. And what's going to happen is, specifically in chapter 13, verse 17, the Medes will come up against them. You may be familiar with the Medes and the Persians. I don't know all the details behind that. Basically, those are kind of like two different peoples that get together and kind of, I think, ally themselves. And so you may remember hearing about like the Medo-Persians or the Medes and the Persians. They kind of formed jointly one kingdom. And in the book of Daniel, We read about that, about Babylon falling to the Medes and the Persians, and then kings like Darius and Cyrus. Those are Persian kings in that next kingdom there. But this is God's plan. After Babylon, right, they will be destroyed, and the Medes are the ones that are going to kind of make that happen. Okay, how is that? How is the fall of Babylon described? What does God say about what will happen to Babylon? What that's going to look like? What it's going to be like when Babylon finally does fall? Harrison. Okay, where do you see some of that language?
That's in 13 and 20. Then 21, the desert creatures will lie down there. Their houses full of owls, ostriches, shaggy goats, hyenas, howl in their fortified towers, and jackals in their luxurious palaces. Her fateful time also will soon come, and her days will not be for long.
Okay, whenever you get owls, ostriches, goats, and hyenas all together, right, this is not a pretty picture of what's going to happen. Okay, but this is actually a fairly common prophetic imagery. Okay, when it talks about kind of like wild animals, especially like these, right, that are inhabiting the cities. Okay, that means that if they're inhabiting the cities, there's not people there, right? And it's like a total desolation. You know, it's not even like, okay, there's a couple other options. It's not like, well, they'll be beat down, but then they'll rebuild and they'll kind of live there again, but not quite as powerful. Okay, that would be one option. The other option would be, well, they'll be overrun and then other people will kind of live in their houses and kind of build that space back up. No, this is none of that. This is the Babylonians will be destroyed, and no one's ever going to live there. It's going to be desolate forever, right, Michael?
And 14:22 says that he'll cut off from Babylon their name, their remnant, and descendants, and posterity.
Yeah, 14:22, Michael points to, it's interesting that both of these chapters here end with the same picture, which is that they're cut off, they're removed, they become a desolation, and that's it, right? People don't live there again, people don't build it back up, it's a desolation, right? And it's left for the shaggy goats. Okay, Weston?
Similarly, in verse 23 of that same chapter, it says, the Lord says, I will sweep it with the broom of destruction. It reminds me of the term we use today, you know, sweeping something under the rug.
Yeah.
In a way, God's saying here, this isn't something, your sin and transgressions are not something you can sweep under the rug. Destruction is coming.
Yeah. The broom of destruction. Sweep you with the broom of destruction. That's pretty good there. That's pretty good. Okay, other descriptions of Babylon's fall. We have kind of the utter desolation, but how else is this described here? Let's go Meredith and then Michael here.
I think the contrast is really stark and helps emphasize how low that they have been brought, because it talks about, like, in 14 verse 13, but in your heart you said, I will ascend to the heaven, I will raise my throne above the stars of God. But then in verse 11, it talks about you've been brought down to Sheol. It doesn't get much lower than that. Maggots are spread out as your bed beneath you, and worms are for your covering. That's a pretty big change.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, maggots and worms is probably worse than the owls and the ostriches. Am I right about that? Yeah, I think so. Michael?
That's what I was going to say.
Okay. Notice this section here in chapter 14, okay? Okay, so Meredith mentions that Sheol is kind of the end for Babylon. Remember, Sheol just is the way of describing death or the grave, all right? But it's not just they're going to Sheol, but what does he say about Sheol and Babylon's, and specifically this is the king of Babylon, meant to represent all of Babylon. This is not one specific king in their history. This is the king of Babylon in kind of a more general sense. But what is it like when the king of Babylon goes down to Sheol, according to chapter 14 here? Yeah, Robert?
In verse 9, it's not a very pretty picture.
Okay.
Hell is excited to see you. It's to meet you at your coming. It stirs up the dead for you. Your pomp is brought down to Sheol, the sound of your string instruments, and then it gets to the maggot.
Yeah, and notice like verse 9 and 10, okay, Sheol, again, death, is excited for the king of Babylon to come. It wakes up everybody, all the dead that are sleeping. It's like going around saying, wake up, guess who's coming? Guess who's coming? The king of Babylon is on his way. And so all the kings of the earth that are dead, okay, who have met that same fate, they wake up and verse 10, they all greet the king of Babylon and say, "You have been made as weak as we have. You and all your glory and all your pomp, you have been brought to the same end, the same result as every one of us." And so he's brought low, and then we get that maggots and worms thing going. And of course, as Meredith points out, that is contrasted, as Michael was going to say too, so he claims. In verse 12, this is contrasted again with their view, Babylon's view of itself. Now, speaking of things that have been messed up in the Bible, like the Babylon thing, this may be the top of the list. How on earth Isaiah 14 and verse 12 has become this kind of description of Satan and what happened to Satan is beyond me. I'm sure there's history there, but there is nothing in this text to indicate that this is talking about Satan at all, okay? In fact, what did the chapter say? But this is the taunt for the king of Babylon, okay? But this is the description here of the king of Babylon. "How you have fallen from heaven, O star of the morning, son of dawn. You have been cut down to the earth. You have weakened you who have weakened the nations. You said you would ascend to heaven and be in the clouds, basically, and you have been brought down to Sheol." By the way, doesn't that description remind you of that first story about Babylon in Genesis chapter 11, right? As the king of Babylon was the one who said, "I will reach into the heavens. I will ascend up into the heights." That was that same goal that the people in Babylon had in Genesis chapter 11, okay? Here's this language about a morning star. What is a morning star? Or what is the morning star? Yeah, so the morning star, how bright is it? It's pretty bright, right? And I think mostly it's Venus. That's why I read that somewhere. I didn't do my astronomical research here, but you see this bright star in the morning, and how long does it last? Yeah. Okay, but and what causes it to go out? Yeah, as soon as the sun comes up, right, then its light is invisible, right? Think about how apt a description that is for Babylon, this mighty nation that shines so bright until the sun comes up, right? And then it's just utterly, not even dwarfed, it's wiped out, right, in the light of the sun. Okay, so this is what we have, okay, and answering both of these here, the first two of these. Babylon is described from man's perspective and from their own perspective as this great and mighty nation lifting itself up to the heavens. How does God see Babylon? Just as this star that goes out as soon as the sun comes up. How does God see Babylon? Just like all the other nations. He sees the king of Babylon like every other king in human history that dies and goes to the grave. How does God see Babylon? Well, when he shows up in chapter 13 on the day of the Lord, Babylon's, limp and cannot do anything. And so this is what God's plan is for Babylon: to humble them, to bring down their pride, to devastate their kingdom, to use the Medes and the Persians to do this, and to conquer them and to bring them to a desolation that will never be rebuilt. Okay, let's quickly go to chapter 21. There's not as much here. There's about 10 verses here at the beginning of chapter 21 that are also an oracle related to Babylon. It talks about the oracle concerning the wilderness of the sea. Okay, not sure what that refers to. Maybe it's the wilderness picture again of the desolation. But as this reading goes on, you'll see how this is related to Babylon. Chapter 21. "The oracle concerning the wilderness of the sea, as windstorms in the Negev sweep on, it comes from the wilderness, from a terrifying land. A harsh vision has been shown to me, a treacherous one still deals treacherously, and the destroyer still destroys. Go up, Elam, lay siege, Media. I have made an end of all the groaning she has caused. For this reason, my loins are full of anguish. Pains have seized me like the pains of a woman in labor. I am so bewildered I cannot hear, so terrified I cannot see. My mind reels, horror overwhelms me. The twilight I long for has been turned for me into trembling. They set the table, they spread out the cloth, they eat, they drink. Rise up, captains, oil the shields. For thus the Lord says to me, go, station the lookout. Let him report what he sees. When he sees riders, horsemen in pairs, a train of donkeys, a train of camels, let him pay close attention, very close attention. Then the lookout called, O Lord, I stand continually by day on the watchtower. I am stationed every night at my guard post. Now behold, here comes a troop of riders, horsemen in pairs. And one said, fallen, fallen is Babylon, and all the images of her gods are shattered on the ground. O my threshed people and my afflicted of the threshing floor, what I have heard from the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, I make known to you. Okay, a little more difficult of a passage. I think understanding chapters 13 and 14 probably helps us in understanding what's going on in verse 21. I think basically this is a picture of the Medes and the Persians, okay, getting ready to go and to accomplish what it is that God has set for them. So they get ready, they strengthen themselves, they oil their shields, and they go out and they do this work. And the second half of this little passage here is kind of seeing them come back, right? And they report back. And the watchman is standing on the post, and he sees these two messengers come back, and one of them says what? Fallen, fallen is Babylon, verse 9. And all the images of her gods are shattered on the ground. That phrase, fallen, fallen is Babylon, is quoted in Revelation 14, verse 8 and 18, verse 2 again, as the big bad city of sin and wickedness in Revelation is referred to as Babylon the Great. Okay, so and by the way, verse 10, I think the what's going on here in this little passage is this is a message for God's people. We didn't talk about this back in chapter 14, but verse 10 of 21 says, "O my threshed people, my afflicted of the threshing floor, what I have heard from the Lord of hosts, I make known to you." Okay, so I think this is talking to the people of God. Think about the people of God that have been beat up, dragged off into captivity by the Babylonians. This is a welcome and comforting message to bring back to these afflicted people of God and say, Babylon has fallen. And that's a message of hope. And we go back now to chapter 14, real quickly, notice that this is what this showed up in chapter 14 as well. Chapter 14 was kicked off by saying that when the Lord will have compassion on Jacob and again choose Israel and settle them in your land. Okay, so once you're back and once the Lord brings you back, then in that day, when the day Lord accomplishes all this, then you will sing your taunt over Babylon. So this is a little bit interesting because Isaiah says, in the day that God brings you back and has compassion on you and settles you in your land, then you'll sing this song. But what do we make of that? I mean, what is that also implying? That they're going to leave, right? There hasn't really been much up to this point about Judah being taken away into captivity, right? And again, think about where Isaiah is, where in time, space and time, I guess. When Isaiah is prophesying, remember, this is before Babylon becomes a superpower. But yet Isaiah looks ahead and says, okay, once you get back from captivity, and everyone's like, wait, what? What are you talking about? Okay. Once you get back, then you will sing this song over Babylon. So there's a large element when Babylon is talked about in Isaiah of looking ahead and what's going to happen. Babylon will be the instrument of God's correction and punishment of Judah, but God has this plan for them as well. What do we learn from all this? Just real quickly, I'm interested to hear your thoughts. This section of Isaiah, I think especially, can get a little bit difficult. And what do we do with all this that's going on? Why is this relevant, as we like to say? But what do we take from all this that we've talked about today? What do we take from this?
God's in control.
God is in control, Harrison says. Brian?
I kind of see where God held the Gentiles and the Israelites
the same standards.
Yeah.
I mean, he punished Israel, or disciplined Israel might be the better term, as Steve brought out in the sermon, because of their sins.
Mm-hmm.
And he's rebuking Babylon, he's rebuking all these other nations because they did the same thing, even though he allowed them to conquer Israel because of their pride and their severity and their oppressions, they too were disciplined.
Yeah. Yeah, the discipline of God, the accountability, Brian points out, not just for Israel, but for all the nations. Michael?
I have a question.
Yeah.
In 13, in that opening section, when he talks about verse 3 and 4 and 5, like these people coming from a distant land, is he talking about Babylon or the Persians?
I think he's talking about the Persians. I guess it's not 100% clear, but I think the opening of 13 is this picture of these this strong army marching, and it's supposed to be looking ahead to Babylon's destruction. And then in verse 6, right, then it all kind of, they get there, and the day of the Lord is upon them, and they have nothing to do. Yeah, Brian?
I see also a path of redemption for the Jew and the Gentile. It's largely contained in other passages as we get into the later aspects of Isaiah, but it's certainly in Isaiah chapter 9. So the spiritual redemption of all people, the Babylonians, the Assyrians, all Gentiles, as well as all Jews, through Counselor,
yeah.
God, Mighty God.
Yeah, and, yeah, Martin?
I was commenting to Wendy that, you know, over the years, we read about these histories. Where is the rest of the world? And it's, everything is about the Middle East.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's just you read over and over and over and over. And
mm-hmm.
Where are we?
Yeah.
Where is the United States?
Yeah. Well, and that's a good question. Martin asked, where is, you know, we have the Middle East kind of, you know, talked about very heavily in the Bible, especially in sections like this. But what about, you know, what about us? What about the United States? What about other nations? And I think that's one of the reasons why a section like this in Isaiah is helpful. I think the fact that God goes around and says Ethiopia, Babylon, Edom, Moab, Assyria, right? The fact that he makes this long list, and think about back then, they didn't have knowledge of the whole globe, right, as we do, right? But basically, God's going through every nation known to man, he has a message for them. And so the message would be that God is looking to all nations, okay? And as the world expands, or as people expand, right, God has this this message of judgment and hope for all peoples. And I want to end kind of commenting on what Brian said. What Brian said is exactly right, that Isaiah looks at the world and says that all nations will come to have an opportunity to come to the Lord through the Messiah. But I think there's something significant about the Babylon prophecy. And remember that this is the picture of Babylon in the Bible, okay? You look through Isaiah, I think you look through the rest of the prophets, okay? There's never anything said about Babylon in particular coming to the Lord. Babylon being invited in. Babylon having a pathway made. And it's not because the specific people of Babylon don't have a chance to make it into the kingdom. You read the book of Daniel, and that's clearly not the case, right? But I think it gets back to this idea that Babylon stands for the city of man, the nation of human pride and human arrogance, of evil. It kind of stands as the epitome of evil in the Bible. And what's the end of that? What do we read in Isaiah 13 and 14? Utter destruction, utter desolation, never to come back again. And remember that these messages were intended to comfort the people of God, right? We should be comforted by the fact that God will destroy evil, never to come back again, right? That all the wickedness, all the human arrogance, human pride, the sin and evil that threatens us and that bothers us and that frustrates us and discourages us, ultimately, in the end, when Jesus comes back, all that will be done away with, okay? And never to rise from the grave again. And that should comfort us, knowing that that's what God's plan is for evil. So for Babylon, as in the representation of human evil, human pride and wickedness, there is no path. There is no path for redemption, because God will conquer evil and triumph over it forever. Okay, we're going to focus on Assyria and Egypt on Wednesday. So look at the end of chapter 14 and then chapters 19 and 20 as well. And we will talk about Egypt and Assyria, and there will be a path for these nations here. So be looking for that.